Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein, and this week we have a fabulous show. But let me first share with you a story. So it's summer. So there's this yeshiva boy. He decides he's going fishing. So he goes to the local hardware store and he buys a rod and a float and some hooks. And maybe he goes home and he takes a piece of fish, probably a little piece of gefilte fish, and he ties it to the end of the hook, and he goes out to the local river or lake, and he tosses it in, and he's fishing. And I'm not sure if he's doing all that well. And next to him, he sees a guy pulls up in a pickup truck, and he pulls out rods and equipment and the whole works. And this guy's put some really good bait on, like some live wiggling worms, and he throws them in, and he watches this guy with fascination. And the guy casts it, and it goes spinning over the water like, I don't know, maybe 500 feet out. And the guy starts winding slowly, you know, to lure the fish. And suddenly, bite! And he's battling this fish, and he pulls and he pulls. And this, like this big 12-pound, maybe a 2-foot fish comes shining out of the water. And the guy pulls it up, looks at it, shakes his head, cuts the, throws it back in. He says, wow, guy, thanks, that's amazing. Shiva boy sitting there, pulls his little fish in, puts another piece of gefilte fish in, washes with. And again, with the shine, he's always, you know, trolling, spinning, casting, saying, bite! Pulls it. Another fish, this one, 25 inches, shining, silver, gorgeous. He looks at it, shakes his head. So the yeshiva boy looks at the guy, this barrel boy looks, and he says, excuse me, sir. Why do you keep throwing back those fish? So the guy looks at him and he says, you know, because at home, I only have a small frying pan. So isn't that, he's throwing back the big fish. His frying pan is too small. Now, this week we start the sphira of Yosef HaTzadik, right? We start the sphira of Yosef. And what was Yosef? Yisrael Ohavis Yosef, of all the children, he's beloved, right? Vayachlem Yosef Chalem. Yosef dreams. He has big dreams. He's going to feed the world in Ruchnias, spiritually, and in Gashmias, physically. He has big dreams. And what does it say about his dreams? V'aviv shamar es hadavar. His father anticipated eagerly the child with the dreams. I ask you, are we sometimes afraid to dream? So let me share with you a thought. And I heard this once from Rabbi Volbe. You know, there's a custom, there's a minhag, that when the Kohanim bless the Kol Yisrael in Chutz Laretz, it's on Yom Tov, it's 13 times a year. And in Eretz Yisrael, it's every day. So in Chutz Laretz, we say the tefillah by the Shalom. We say the tefillah about Hatavas Chalom, the tefillah for the proper dreams. And mostly people assume it's about dread, if somebody dreamt the wrong thing, bad things shouldn't happen, etc. And that's one way of looking at it. But possibly another way of looking at it is, am I dreaming the proper dreams? Are your dreams big enough? Are your dreams scaring you, and therefore, is your frying pan too small? So it's really a prayer, Rabbeinu Shalom, Lord, make my vision bigger, enlarge my scope, enlighten me, let me have the right dreams, let other people look at me differently, because if they look at me differently, I too will grow. This week, we have fantastic show and great guests. Our discussion is the Zika virus. The Zika virus, as everybody knows, is a mosquito-borne virus. And the question is, do you abort a child with the Zika virus? So we will be discussing this with Reb David Cohn. To me, he's the Paisik of America. He's the Rav of Gvul Yavitz, the Rav of Hatzal in America, in New York, the Rav of Ohel. We will be discussing this with an unusual, somebody who's a combination, not only a rabbi, but also the head of infectious diseases at a New York hospital, as well as with Rabbi Arya Leibowitz, who is the number one Maggid Shir on YUTAR. You can listen to us Matzah Shabbos from 11 to 12 midnight on WMCA or 570 AM on Nachum Siegel Network. If you don't burn the midnight oil, you can listen to us Monday morning at 11 AM on Nachum Siegel. You can also find us always at www.headlinesbook.com under the audio or podcast section. And we now have a hotline. You can listen to all our previous shows at 732-806-8700. Now, the winners to last week's raffle are the Heinenbergs from Queens. And we have Levi Leiterer from Ramat Beit Shemesh in Israel. We have Chaim Greenwald from Calgary, Alberta. So we have two continents here. We have three countries and two continents. Now, one of the greatest souls of the 19th century was Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who was Rosh Yeshiva Volozhin. And they say when he was a little boy, he wasn't interested in studying. So his parents took him to become an apprentice shoemaker. And they said, look, you don't want to study, you'll just become a shoemaker. And he got very shook up, and he said, you know what, I'm going to go back to school. And he went to school, and he became a real prodigious, student, and he became the greatest dean and one of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim Gaonim of his generation. And he used to say over, he said, imagine if I hadn't studied, I would have come to the great court up in heaven. And I would have come there and they said, what did you produce in your life? And I would have shown all my shoes. And they would have said, shoes, look what you could have produced. And they would have brought to me all the great publishings he published, the Hemek Shaila, the Meshiv Damar, the Hemek Davar, his Pirish on the Shir HaShirim, the Dvar HaEmek, his Pirish, the Imre Shef on the Haggadah. He said, and all you have is shoes? And every one of us, are they going to look at us and say, you came with such a small frying pan? Look what you could have produced. We have the great honor of having with us on the phone Hagoyin Harav Reb David Kohn. He's the Moira D'Asra of Gvul Yavetz. He's also the Moira D'Asra of Ohel and of Hatzala of Flatbush. Welcome, Reb David.
Thank you. I always feel welcome when you speak to me.
So, according to the CDC, the Zika virus will likely arrive in the southern United States this summer in force. There have been 503 cases already. In Brazil, there are 1.3 million cases. When it attacks the fetus, often gets a disease called microcephaly, which causes mental retardation, poor motor function, speech issues, as well as seizures, an IQ of under 70. So, according to David Agus and the CDC, it will be arriving in New York. They do not know to what extent this summer. So my question is, if Rachmana Litzlan, a mother, is bitten by a virus that carries Zika, and the doctor affirms that the fetus does have is infected by the Zika virus, and she would call the Rav and she would say, do I have a right to abort this child, or should I carry to term a child that will have all these symptoms? What would the Rav say?
I want to take exception to the question, because since we are going public, so to speak, this answer is going to be aired. I don't think it's appropriate for me to say my psak, especially when it's a controversial topic. It is well known that this was a machlekes, a very, very, when you say great gedolim, it's like saying very many, many times. But they were both Rabbim Shel Kol Bnei Agoila, Rab Meisha Feinstein, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, and Rabbi Lez Yehuda Waldenberg, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. Gedolei Olam, literally. And these are Yidden that were Shailet B'chol HaTerekula, And this was a well-known controversy. So before I even discuss their controversy, I feel that one fundamental approach, how anyone who asks a Shiloh should ask a Shiloh, they're actually, there's a steer in Sugyas that the Rishonim address, that on one, in one Sugya we have that the Sugya Yevamis, that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, the Gemara addressed it even after Abasco came out and said Halacha Kehillel, whether there was still a machlekes, whether you go with the Baskoil or not. So Beis Shammai went with Beis Shammai, with the halachas of their people, Beis Shammai. And Beis Hillel went with the their Mesor of halacha. And they argued in so many areas, even in things that have to do with Kores. According to Beis Shammai, there was Yibim by Tzoras Habas. The Tzoras Erva, they held there's Yibim. According to Beis Hillel, it's Kores. And it's interesting how they had such a beautiful relationship that they intermarried, but each one would let the other one know that according to you, you can't marry. According to you, this girl is a mamzeris. But by according to us, a mitzvah of Yivim was done. And as Rabbi Yisrael Salanta Zatzal pointed out, that in the Eilam HaEmes, there's no doubt that the people of Beis Shammai or Miyavim will get schar for the mitzvah of doing the mitzvah of Yivim. And if Chalila, someone from Beis Hillel, married a mamzeres, according to Beis Hillel, it's an Aveira, and it's a stain throughout, because each one's sheet in Halacha has a kiyum, as far as that's concerned. Even though Halacha L'maisa, we paskin like Beis Hillel in this world. This is what Rav Yisrael Salanta said. But you see from this that they kept their tradition in Halacha. And on the other hand, there's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Dav Zayin, Amar Aleph, where the Gemara says, when there are trei tanoim that have a machlekes, and lo itma ilchus, lo kamar, velo kamar, there was not a hachra, certainly not by Sanhedrin, what do you do? So it says, you follow the one who's gadol b'chachma uv'minyan. And if you can't do that, because they're shavim, let's say, or it's not established, by the Raisi you go la Chumra, and by the Rabbanan you go la Kula. That's totally different than you have this Sugya in Yevamis. So the Shainim put this down, that this is the way to do it, that a person ideally should have a Mora D'Asra. And the Muradasra is his Rebbe, which is the same as Beis Shammai in the tradition of Shammai and Beis Shammai, and the people of Beis Hillel in the tradition of Hillel u Beis Hillel. Everyone should follow his tradition, meaning he follows his Muradasra. That's the ideal situation. There was a tkufa, and on the other hand, if a person doesn't have a maradasra, then a person follows the rules as said in Avodah Zarah, Dav Zayin Amar Aleph. So the rule given to each and every person when he asks a shaila is, do you have a maradasra, someone that you were makabel as your rav and hayra? Well, you don't have a maradasra, and that's how you should follow it. Ideally, every frumayid, we assume, should follow the rules of his maradasra, ask shailas by his maradasra, not ask shailas by whomever it's convenient, because you would like to have a kula, so-and-so we know, gives the kula, go to him. That's not the way halachas are supposed to be paskened. These are the ground rules for anyone who's asking a shaila. Now let me comment on the machlekes of Rav Moshe and Rav Waldenberg, Zichronim Levracha. I happen to have spoken to Rav Moshe Zatzal. I had an audience with him many years ago. I had a very close friend of mine who was close to the family was able to give me an appointment. And there's much, perhaps if I find time to write a memoir, I would write the very interesting things that happened at that sitting. But I will comment that I did discuss this with Rav Moshe. I believe that he is the one who brought it up. And Rav Moshe was the one who was very, very machmir in the boarding. And I can't even say how far he went. He was very machmir. He considered it avak ritzicha. Very strong machmir. Rav Waldenberg, on the other hand, Rav Waldenberg held that any kind of source of agmas nefesh to the woman he held, it has nothing whatsoever to do with ritzicha. It has to do, she's uberi erechimai, like the Gemara in Erech and Av Zayin. It's like any other operation, you don't do it for nothing. Maybe there are isurim derabbanan involved, which were nitcha for any valid reason that he gave, and he felt the agmas nefesh, especially the tsar gadol, even in a situation of a Down syndrome, he was mata to terminate the pregnancy, even at 7 months and more, because, as the Rambam says, kol zman shelo neker avlat lotzeis, it has that halacha of ubriyarachimai. And it's a very, very difficult Rambam. Reb Chaim Brisker explains it. And after the explanation, it's very controversial, difficult to understand how the Rambam understood the whole sugya in Sanhedrin Ayin Beis. It's a very, very difficult sugya. Rav Waldenberg, when he wrote his tshuva, he spoke, whenever he mentioned Rav Moshe HaGoyin, Rav Moshe Feinstein, you see that he was very much bucky and very much machshiv the words of Rav Moshe. This tshuva that he wrote, and it's basically, I think, in the 14th to 15th volume of his tshuvas, it's incredulous. He is incredulous how the, and he writes with very, like he can't believe it, he can't understand it. His criticism of Rav Moshe's psak is that he says Rav Moshe is going against all the achronim, and he gives you a whole list of achronim that learned the sugyas the way they did, and that clearly they disagree with Rav Moshe. Not only that, Taisus and Nidam Em Dalad, which is clearly not like Rav Moshe, Rav Moshe says, well, it's a mistake in two places in Taisus. Not only that, there's a Maharit that's clearly not like Rav Moshe. And Rav Moshe writes, well, I believe he told me that he didn't see the Maharit because someone brings it, and I want to comment with something very interesting bibliography about bibliography that Rav... The Rav Issa Yehuda Unterman Zatzal, the Rav Arashi, who wrote on this topic, also said, I didn't find the Behetiv as being quoted in the name of the Marit, and I haven't seen it. And I believe Rav Moshe also told me he didn't see the Marit. So when I spoke to Rav Moshe, I told him where the Marit is, and I also told him that there's a bibliographer error, which goes back to the time of the Pesel Ba'alban, which was the most beautiful Al-Bachelke Shulchan Aruch, except for Yerideya, which later on, the Vilna Yerideya printed the most beautiful Yerideya since the beginning of printing, with all the Mefarshim. So there was an error here, which I'll go into right away. So I both mentioned the Marit to Rav Moshe, who brings such a strong raya that you can't say it has anything to do with Ritzicha, because the Torah says, Ki Yenotsu, Anoshim, and the Gemara says, B'motzois Shebenisakos Medaba, means they were fighting to kill one another. So it's Matzah Shebemitzah V'nokfu Isha Hora. So even though Yotzu Yiladeho, there's only payment. Now, if there's any kind of misa, if there's any kind of ritzicha in the Nokfui Shahara Vyatsu Yoladeha, the Marit says, why don't you say, come labor the Rabmina, according to Tana de Vechiskia, even if there was no Asra, that he says is proof that it has nothing whatsoever to do with even Avak Ritzicha. This is the Marit Shraya. But Simon Tov Chof Hei is where this question is addressed in Hilchos Reidev, because the Rambam and the Sugya deals with Reidev, Kotna Reidev. So we put it together with Hilchos Reidev. So by mistake, they would normally print the Be'etiv of Yehuda Tiktin, and they went ahead and printed the Be'etiv of Schayim and Del Belz, who doesn't bring the Marit. The Be'etiv of Yehuda Tiktin brings the Marit. So evidently, Rav Unterman was looking in the Be'etiv of Schayim and Del, and it was quoted that the Be'etiv brings the Marit. He said, he writes, I didn't see the Marit because it's not my Be'etiv. And I believe I remember like telling this to Rav Meisha as well, because he said, I didn't see the Marit.
But respectfully to the Rav, a few points let me respond to. You said that since Tana de Vechiskiya, it should be Kimle Midrab Mine, even according to the Rishonim that Aseret, and they say it's Avak, and they would hold it's Avak Ritzicha, according to those, let's say, according to Rav Meisha, it doesn't mean there would be a Chiyav Misa.
And everyone even knows there's no Chiyav Misa.
Good, so by Tana de Vechiskiya, if there's no Chiyav Misa Karis, you don't say Kimle
is saying even B'Shegeg, and Rashi in Bava Kama Lamed Hei, I believe, says that even though Makalko is Potter, but because of Tana de Vechiskia, you say Kamali B'Ramine. Tosis argues, but you see how far.
But it has to be on something that hasn't
extended.
But it has to be on
something. Makalko is only a Drabonon, and yet Rashi applies Tana de Vechiskia. So that would, according to Rashi, what you said is being refuted. Certainly according to Rashi. But you have to understand that, and I would like to comment.
But so the Rav, respectfully.
Go ahead. I'm just telling you that the argument of the Marit is a valid argument.
Yeah, but Makalkal is, it's an Issid Rabbanon on something that is a Chiyav Misa. Here, there's no Chiyav Misa. It's like a Vak Lashon Hara.
But I'm telling you what the Marit says.
I understand, but
tell you about Marit. The Marit is a Kadmain, and certainly by the authority, he's not the only one that Sitz Eliezer quotes a Rishim, literally, of Achrayim, and everyone holds him.
I'm only responding to that Raya. For example,
Rav Yankov Emden says that you're allowed to, no one holds that you're allowed to kill a Mamza. But in the case of Mamzerus, Rav Yankov Emden says, you can abort a mamzer.
It seems from all the achrayim,
no one held like Rav Meisha lahalacha.
Well, so let me just ask the Rav a few questions. According to the Marit, the way the understanding of the Marit, the Shari Tshuva says that being mevazes somebody is avak ritzicha. So if somebody's mevazes somebody,
would there be a din of kimle midrabmine? It's hard to answer. It says the means in Dinei Shemayim, it's an avak. Would it be a din of kumle?
There is by
avak arayas. And the Gemara has two rationale. The person wanted to speak with someone, Me'achayre Hageder. So if she was an Ashes Ish, the Gemara calls it avak arayas. In other words, he wanted to speak evidently like Divrei Cheshek. So the Gemara says, Yehorig Valyavar, because it's Habizrayu the Gilarayas. And if you hold it was a Pnuya, it was like a Takona, Shalot Tehei Benais Yisrael Perutzim. But you see, by Yehorig Valyavar, we apply Avak. Well, it would be very mechudishtik to say by Kim Leiber de Rab Minei. I agree with you.
So let me ask the Rav another question.
Marit. It's an authoritative rishon and a psak.
Rav,
you know, you can't. You can talk and learning, but he counts. But it's not only the Marit.
But there's also a stira. There's another Marit.
There's literally dozens of gedolei achronim throughout the ages. Are you allowed to kill a mamza? No. No one ever dreamt to let you kill a mamza. Rabbi Yankov Emden says it's pasha to abort a mamza. Okay. Whether it was b'mezid, b'sheigeg, whatever happened, he says, of course you abort a mamza. If it's a vakret sicha, how could he say that? It's clear.
But what does he do with Taisfis? What do we do with Taisfis? We have Taisfis in Sanhedrin that says it is a din of miyaka midi, Taisan daf nun tes, that says it is a din of miyaka midi, and Avadi says there would be a din of miyaka midi by harigas uber of a guy. So Taisis clearly says it's aser in Sanhedrin.
They deal with this Taisis, that once there's any kind of issa, you don't say miyaka midi. And everyone agrees, I think the Sri Deish talks about this, that there is an issa chavala, so you don't say miyaka midi anymore. You know, if there is an issa, it doesn't have to be the same issa. So once there is an issa, and that issa, like for any operation where there's necessity, we don't consider it chavala. So even though normally there's an issa chavala, that takes off miyaka midi.
But
the achronim deal with this question.
Yeah,
I'm almost positive the Sri Deish deals with this particular question. But they talk with it. The Pella on Rav Meisha is the fact that Rav Meisha, on things that there are authorities, I say, says it must be a Talmud Taya. This is what the Tzitzeliezer says. He says, we never heard of such kind of reasoning. You're telling me Taisus and Nida disagrees with what you say. So therefore, you're saying it's a mistake, it's a Taz Hadfus, two places. He says, what kind of derech is this? So that's what I'd like to comment on, that the Tzitzeliezer didn't realize Lani is not the, and it's by me, it's not a conjecture. If you would make a study of Rav Meisha's Chuvis, you would see that Rav Meisha had a different Messiah altogether in Hiroah. And there was such a Messiah, and we know there was such a Messiah from the Goyen, and perhaps even earlier. We know that from Rav Chaim Volozhiner, that he went with the Messiah that paskening a shaila does not mean putting together what other paiskim say. To them, they were mevatelis. In Lit, I heard that the greatest insult you could give to a Litvish, a Baal Hira, is that he paskens from the Pischa Tshuva, or Sharei Tshuva. And they used to say on those paiskim that used to bring bekiyas of other paiskim in their responsa, medafim tzolim tregergeld. A treger is a porter. We should pay him for being a porter that he brought together psukim. To them, that was the greatest bittel. Paskening a shy lament, going through the sugya yourself, and working through the sugya as if you were a rishon, and telling me what the halacha is according to your understanding of the sugya, and you have a perfect right to argue on any rishon that you wish. This was the Messiah, but it's not derech kavod to do so. So you should say some sort of a doichik why you're not dealing with the sugya like this in this rishon. And an example given was Rav Chaim Volozhiner once argued on a Beis Yosef in the inyan of Meliach Hareu Kareseach. And he said, don't ask me questions from the Beis Yosef. He in his place, they had a different salt, which in halacha is not meaningful. But it's like saying, I'm not arguing with him. Don't ask me questions. It's derech hanivus. There are many cases where Rav Meisha made his psak and would write, what about this and this Ramban, who's not like me? And he would be mefalpel in the Ramban, and not bother to answer how he's reconciling his psak with the Ramban. Because Rav Moshe Paskin Shilas, according to this Messiah, it's clear to me. So that's why when he's Magian the Taisus, or he says Talmud Toya Kosav, this is his way of saying it's a different salt we're dealing with. It's a Derech Kovet to Rishonim. But Rav Moshe is arguing because this is his Messiah and had a Paskin Shaila. And that's why that Tzitz Eliezer, who had a totally different Messiah, who Kaseder is bringing all Paiskim that he could find because of his Messiah, who's incredulous that Rav Moshe should say what he's saying. So people have to understand where Rav Moshe's Atzal is coming from. But the bottom line is that a person has to ask a shaila of his maladasra, not pick and choose.
Thank you very much. That was a Gaon HaRav, Reb David Cohen. Thank you very much, Reb David. It's always a kavod gadol to have you with us.
Feelings mutual, Kol Tov.
We have the honor of having with us on the phone somebody who has two auspicious titles. He's the Associate Rav of Anshei Chesed in Yulet. He's the assistant rabbi of the Young Israel of Woodmere, and he is also chairman of the Department of Medicine and chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases of South Nassau Hospital. Welcome, Rabbi Dr. Aaron Glatt.
It's a pleasure to be here today with you. Thank you for inviting me.
So it's really wonderful to have somebody who can speak about both topics, infectious diseases, as well as the halacha of abortion contemporaneously. Rabbi Glatt, start off with saying, well, in this case I'm going to ask Dr. Glatt, what is the risk to somebody living in New York, Baltimore, maybe Florida? Give us just a brief snapshot.
So Baruch Hashem today, at this moment in time, which is Lamed Beis and the Sefiras HaOmer, the native cases of Zika in the United States remain zero. That means that in the United States right now, all of the cases that have been identified have been brought in from people that have traveled to locations in Central and South America where Zika is prevalent, where the virus that causes Zika is prevalent and it's transmitted by mosquitoes. Whether that will change or not is a very, very big shaila. And there are concerns that as the virus vector, which is the mosquito called the Aedes aegypti or other types of Aedes mosquitoes, as they travel up into the United States, which they have done in the past, and have the potential to transmit Zika virus when they bite people. So therefore, the concern would be, will these numbers that I just told you change? And that would be a very, very, very big change in the way the disease is spread in the United States.
As a physician of infectious diseases, is there any way to test a pregnant woman's fetus to see if the fetus has been infected by Zika?
So there are a very, very important question. There are a number of tests that any woman who potentially has been exposed to Zika, either through herself or through her husband, that person should absolutely be seen by a knowledgeable physician, whether that's an obstetrician, gynecologist, whether that's an internist or an infectious disease physician, whoever that might be. That person would know the appropriate blood test that can be done. There's actually now a urine test that can be done. There are other tests that can be done to determine whether this woman, Rahman al-Islam, has been infected with Zika. And then if the woman has been infected, there is the potential to transmit it to her baby inside of her. And that can lead to terrible consequences. Rahman al-Islam, you can have a child that is born with very serious birth defects, something called microcephaly. You can have less severe forms of that. In some situations, it can cause miscarriages, Rahman al-Islam. So it's very important that any pregnant woman that is at risk for Zika acquisition, that she be seen by her physician, who will hopefully, Mirz Hashem, know what test to do and then what advice to give. And then, of course, unfortunately, that's when the shailas come to the Rav as well, in terms of what the Rav is going to allow or not allow, in terms of any interventions that medicine might recommend, but would be possibly keneged halacha.
Can the fetus be tested, or would it always be on a tzad ha-safek? If the mother has it, we don't know what the kid is. Or can we know whether the child actually has Zika?
So we do have surrogate types of tests in the child, and that's basically the uses of sonograms. If the mother has been infected, and we know for certain that there's the potential to transmit it to the baby. So then in that situation, we don't have a test to say, yes, the baby is definitely infected or not. But what we can do is look for evidence of damage, Rahman al-Islam, in the baby to see if the baby's not developing properly, if there are findings on the sonograms that you would recommend serially in such women, if there are, unfortunately, changes that are suggestive of significant Zika infection. So then that's how you would detect the impact of Zika on the baby.
Which is very problematic, Rabbi Glatt. It's very problematic because if the only way to check it is through findings on the sonogram, I imagine that these can only do after, these can only be done after the first 40 days, would be
yes,
two,
yes.
Which means before that it would be a much more halachically simple remedy, and after 40 days we enter into a much more halachically difficult.
Just for the audience that might not be familiar with what you were just talking about, there are differences in the stage of the pregnancy in halacha. So we have to start right off and say halacha never sanctions any sort of non-halachically sanctioned abortion. And that would include it even in the first 40 days when we refer to the growing fetus inside the mother as maya bi'alma, as just water, which is a euphemism that's used in the Gemara. It doesn't imply that it's just water. We know, we can detect that the baby is beginning to be formed. And at the age of 40, Chazal obviously had Ruach HaKodesh, and they knew that at the age of 40, something magically transforms. And we know scientifically today that all of the baby's organs are actually formed in miniature by the 40-day period of time. So there's the halachic concept of 40 days is an absolutely accurate medical concept as well. In fact, we use a description. We no longer call the baby an embryo at that point. We call the baby a fetus. So the halacha actually parallels science beautifully. And the suggestion that it's permitted in any way to do stam without any reason an abortion before 40 days is halachically, of course, incorrect. But where halacha does sanction that an intervention to cause the mother to lose the baby is halachically sanctioned, so all things being equal, it's preferable to do this before 40 days. But as you correctly stated, we may not know that information before day 40, and therefore that usually is not going to be a potential in halacha for us to make that decision. In the secular world where these types of questions aren't unfortunately asked, so then what some recommend, again I stress this in the secular world, is if a woman were to get pregnant in that situation, or don't allow a woman to get pregnant in that situation, you can avert the potential problems of microcephaly by just aborting every single pregnancy or not allowing every single pregnancy to occur. And that, of course, poses huge halachic shilas that need to be individualized for every single case and as to a godel b'torah, a rav that understands the issue, and to paskin for every individual case what the halacha is.
Now, what are the odds of a woman who's getting Zika, what are the odds of the child actually getting microcephaly?
So we don't know the answer to that for sure, but Baruch Hashem, it's not as bad as one might have guessed. And in fact, if the mother was asymptomatic, that means if the mother had no symptoms of Zika, the symptoms of Zika can be very nonspecific, they could be like the flu, or they can be more specific in terms of sometimes you can have an arthritis or pains in the joints, you can get a rash, you can get something called conjunctivitis, which is like a pink eye, a redness of the eye, you get fevers, you get a flu-like syndrome. So if somebody's coming from an endemic area, say they went away for Pesach, they get the Shiloh many, many times, the people went away for Pesach, and they come back with these symptoms, and they're a couple that's either pregnant or interested in becoming pregnant, what should they do? So these shailas do come up, and in this situation, what the mother should do will be determined on whether she had symptoms or not, to Lanias Dati, in a large way. The data suggests that if the mother is not ever having had symptoms, the likelihood of transmitting to the baby is very, very, very low. And the chances even of the mother having had infection with Zika, even though she was in an endemic area, is very low, relatively speaking, compared to the women who did have symptoms. The women who did have symptoms coming from an endemic area are much more likely to have acquired Zika. The mother is more likely to have acquired Zika. Then you test the mother, she did have a Zika exposure, so the baby has some sort of a chance as well. We don't know what that exact number is. Some studies suggest it's 1 in 100. Other studies suggest it's more frequent than that, maybe even 1 in 5. So we really don't know the right answer for that. Even within that, we don't know how severe it will be. So not every single mother who's going to even transfer to the baby will have the worst scenario.
So, Rabbi Gold, let me start the next question, because what I was going to ask you is, a woman has the Zika virus, asymptomatic, and it's within the first 40 days. Do you say, well, abort now, and it may even be able to done with a pill for, I mean, can it be done at that point with a pill if it's early enough?
Sure.
So, or do you say, wait, since it's just 1 in 100, it's a miat, even though you could do it now, let's wait and see what happens and go into the second trimester where it's much more halachically problematic. Which way would you vote as a rabbi? I think that's a little bit, we're sort of jumping the gun,
right,
a little bit.
So I'm not here to paskin for anybody. These shilas, you need Gedola Yisrael to paskin, number one, and each case needs to be individualized in terms of the specifics. But Lani is dati, we need a little bit more information before you can even answer that question in general or specific. You need to know, really, what is the likelihood that the mother actually has Zika. So if you know for a fact that the mother was symptomatic, had Zika, and you know for a fact that she's pregnant right now, so that's a shaila that they need to discuss with their rav, what should be done before 40 days in the pregnancy. I think, statistically speaking, without knowing anything else about the patient, there's a good chance that the baby will be born healthy. How good a chance, I cannot state. I don't think anybody would have the ability to predict that, and that's where a rav would need to get involved in terms of what is considered acceptable. You need to look at the mother's mental state as well. You need to look at other factors. A rav will take these into account when shilas are asked, and you have different opinions amongst the poskim. This question was raised many years ago and was presented to Rav Osner Zatzal, the great Shevet Alevi, and this was in regards to rubella vaccination when it came out, and many women who were unknowingly pregnant received the rubella vaccine, and the shilas were asked to his beis din, and he paskened that you were not allowed to do an abortion in those situations, even though I think it was before 40 days in many of the cases, but I don't know that for a fact. And he says, Baruch Hashem, in his beis din, they only had 1,000 shilas that were asked. They didn't matter a single case of abortion, and only one baby was born out of all those babies that were born with a minor problem. The rest of the babies, Baruch Hashem, were all normal. So, again, these are shilas that are berumah shel olam. They need to be asked to a great gadol, a tremendous posek, and it's not to be done lightly, and certainly shouldn't be done as a routine, as a recommendation, that abortion should be done in all these women before 40 days.
So let's go to the shaila itself. So and you mentioned Rav Osner. I understand you have smicha from Rav Osner, from his son.
From his grandson.
His grandson. So walk me through, how is a rav, how would you address this shaila?
So I think the first thing to do always with every shaila is to go and make sure that you know the medical facts. I remember Rav Shechter Shlita, who was one of my rabbeim, and he told me a story about the rav, Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitchik Zatzal, who, when he was asked the shaila way back 50, 60 years ago, are you allowed to use a certain watch on Shabbos? So he told the boys, bring me a screwdriver, and he took the watch apart so he would know how the watch worked, and then he could paskin the shaila. You can't paskin a shaila through Ruach HaKodesh, Lo B'Shamayim Hi. You can't paskin a shaila based upon inaccurate medical information. Nebuch, unfortunately, there are a lot of inaccurate medical information that are brought to the Rav, and the Rav paskins correctly based upon the incorrect information, but he paskins wrong, Labaisa. And I see this all the time. I get shailas asked to me all the time, and they ask me a shaila, but I tell them the medical information you're presenting to me is absolutely wrong. There's no way it could be right. And Baruch Hashem, I know both worlds. So, and then when I get the right information, I say I would have paskined incorrectly. A classical example is, can you take this medication on Shabbos? So I say, if I wasn't the doctor, I would tell you, yes, you can, because the doctor said you should take it. But I'm also telling you as a physician that the doctor is wrong and you shouldn't be taking this medication. It's inappropriate. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you're not allowed to take it on Shabbos because it's not indicated. So that's the type of a thing over here as well. If the Rav isn't exactly aware of what the medical information is, and sometimes the CDC doesn't give medical information, they give recommendations based upon their best guess. And that's very good, and the CDC should be doing things like that, but when a Rav paskins a shaila, he has to know what the facts are and not what the secular world's recommendations are. So, for example, in the secular world, they say that if a woman is pregnant, she shouldn't have relations with anybody that's been in a Zika area, including her husband, for the entire pregnancy without using a condom or abstain. So this to me is a recommendation from the CDC that's not based upon hard science, and the RUV needs to know the facts, what the hard science is, to decide whether that type of recommendation to use a condom throughout the pregnancy is halakhically sanctioned or not. So that was a long-winded answer to your question. I hope it answered it.
And Israel Herschel Schechter, does he go with the Tzitz Eliezer or with Rav Moshe?
I think his opinion is much more in line with Rav Moshe.
Wow. So he holds it as an Isser Harigas Uber. And does he have any raya? Like, Rav Moshe's raya is from the Rambam that considers it, his primary raya is that the Rambam considers it a raidif. But the Achiezer already points out that the problem with that raya is that it's talking about a vlad shenekar mimkaimai, the child is already not uber yerach imai because the mother is in the process of giving birth or about to give birth. And clearly at that point, the child can be considered a life of its own. Is there any clear raya that you could point to that would say that a child has a din of a nefesh besides the Rambam?
So I think that this is a much more advanced discussion than probably is able to be done at this point in time. I think suffice to say that there are numerous different opinions as to what exactly the isser of abortion is in halacha. L'kuli amal l'pligi, that it's not an isser of mises beisdin. It's not a classical ritzicha in the sense. There are opinions that say it's ritzicha derabanan. There are opinions that say it's chavala. There are opinions that say that it's shechvezer levatala. There are many different opinions as to what the actual isser is. That doesn't minimize the fact that it's an isser, but the severity of the isser will be totally in how a person might paskin. Then you also have to take into account the mother's status. You also have to take into account the severity of the microcephaly. There are certainly poskim that might allow an abortion in a very severe case that might not allow an abortion in a much more moderate case of damage to the fetus that's demonstrated as best as we can by sonograms or other testing. So again, it's very difficult to give a general psak halacha. And the Tzitz Eliezer was, to a large extent, a das yochid. I don't think it's only Rav Moshe that disagreed with his opinion, allowing abortions relatively late up until 6 months. I think I'm not aware of any other posik that held like the Tzitz Eliezer that would allow such an abortion at such a late point in time.
Well, he quotes the Marit, for starters, right? So that's
I'm talking about contemporary posts.
Yeah, I understand, but he brings a slew of poskim who would seem to agree with
him. Tzitz Eliezer doesn't have to worry about what I think or what anyone else.
Yeah, I'm just saying,
Tzitz Eliezer.
But he also quotes.
I don't think most of the
Rabbi Yankif Emden. He brings Rabbi Yankif Emden, who quotes like that. The Rav Pa'olim, the Ben Ish Chai. I mean,
the fact that somebody is able to support their shita with many different earlier rishonim and poskim doesn't take it away that his shita still is lamaisa, not a universally accepted shita.
That is true.
It doesn't mean to say that you can't rely upon it. I know I've heard stories. I don't know them directly, so I won't mention who I've heard them from, but I've heard people tell me that when Rav Moshe was sometimes asked some of these very, very, very difficult shailas, a woman in the fourth month of pregnancy that never has a bad diagnosis on the fetus of what they should do. So I heard in the name of Rav Moshe, I don't know the veracity of this, so I can't attest to it, but I heard in the name of Rav Moshe, he said, I don't want to pass him the shaila, but there's a great Rav in Eretz Yisrael, the Tzitz Eliezer, go and ask him this shaila. So what the Rav Moshe was saying, you can rely upon the Tzitz Eliezer in that situation, assuming this is a true story. Clearly, Rav Moshe, if this is a true story, allowed that to occur. So the Tzitz Eliezer is a Gadol B'Torah, and anybody who's a Talmud of the Tzitz Eliezer follows the Pesachim of the Tzitz Eliezer, so then certainly they have Gedolei Yisrael that they can rely upon. But for just a local person to say, I want to follow the Tzitz Eliezer in this situation, so that's already problematic.
It's interesting that you mention that story because Rav Moshe uses very strong language in his psak. His lashon is shara le'mara, may God forgive him for his error. It's interesting that he was still.
So that's why I said I don't know the story directly myself. You know, like to say over something that's a hearsay type of evidence. But I've heard this story by so many different people. It's not I've heard it from only one person that I suspect there may be some truth to it.
Well, Rabbi Glatt, thank you very much for clarifying both the halacha and also as well as the medical points, the different things that you can do all along the way. And hopefully it never becomes a problem. It's just hopefully it's just lepulpulei shel Torah and it doesn't become a shaila lemaisa.
Amen. That would be the hope. I would just add one last caveat if I can. The biggest question that I was asked in terms of the frequency was, can I travel to those areas?
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I would certainly tell people, at the present time, when it's not in the United States, that unless there's a really strong parnassa reason to go to travel to those places, with some of them were, people were running various Pesach programs and asked me, my husband has to go to this place, so what's the din? What should we do? So in those situations where you have a heter for parnassa, there may be a heter to go to those places. So linyan hasdati, that's not a correct approach. And one should avoid these shilas by not traveling to areas where there's Zika prevalence. So to people that live in those areas, that's a very, very big problem.
So you're saying to go there would be an Isser of Shmartam less Asdav Sheyesechem, but
for Parnassa? I don't say an Isser. I say it's certainly not a very appropriate thing to do. I can't say that it's an Isser because I don't know if it reaches that level.
But to go there for Parnassa, you have the Gemara. The Gemara says, Oilu Lekiva, Oilu Leilan, Oilu Lekeves. What do you do for Parnassa?
Right. Okay. So for Parnassa, there may be some Heterim. Yeah. Again, even there, you have to ask yourself how essential it is. And then even when you do go, there's certainly things that a person can do to minimize their risk of coming into contact with mosquitoes. So depending what you're doing, if you're the mashkiach in the hotel, so don't leave the hotel. There's not too many mosquitoes in the hotel. So who gives you a heter to go running around all over the place? You want to go see the Amazon. You want to go see all these places where there are lots of mosquitoes. So then that's a different shaila. So for the parnassa part, there may be heterim, and certainly to make sure you use appropriate mosquito netting and appropriate mosquito sprays, etc. That's all part of nishmat modus nafshu seichem.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Glatt.
It's my pleasure. Mitzvah Hashem should be just lahagdol Torah lad here.
Amen. Kulta. We have on the phone with us Rabbi Arya Leibowitz, who serves as the Mora d'Asra Beis HaKnesses of North Woodmere, and I believe has more than 4,000 shiurim on YU Torah online. Welcome, Rabbi Leibowitz.
Thank you very much. Always good to talk to you.
So, Rabbi Leibowitz, the Zika virus, according to the CDC's warnings, will very likely reach Florida this year, and very possibly, they say, the New York area. And if a woman, Chas V'Shalom, were to acquire it during pregnancy, the child possibly could have a severe disease, a microcephaly, which speech, mental retardation, IQ below 70, very severe defects. So I understand that you've spoken about this, and both halachically, can you tell me what, I understand you had with Rabbi Asher Weiss, you spoke about it. Can you tell me some of your thoughts on this matter?
My conversation with Rabbi Asher Weiss was more eavesdropping on his conversation with a doctor who had looked into it a lot. So I don't want to misrepresent that I really did all that much research. I think it's important to sort the hype from the reality when it comes to the Zika virus. The amount of people that, as terrible as it is and as dangerous as it could potentially be, especially for a pregnant woman, the amount of people that are actually affected by it, certainly the amount of fatalities, are not nearly what you would believe if you were just keeping an eye on the media. Now, obviously, in halacha, we always have an obligation to protect our health. We have a mitzvah of the chai behem. We're supposed to protect ourselves from illness. Our bodies aren't our own. And this is numerous sources that obviously make this point. The Rambam and Hilchos and Sanhedrin highlight this point. So anything that's recommended by the CDC, by government agencies that are meant to protect its citizens and does not compromise halacha would without question be followed. The question becomes when there are issues that would call for some compromise in halacha, and then we have to really start sorting fiction from reality and what the percentages really are. And there's a certain amount of political correctness in some of the literature that we sort of have to see through. I haven't gotten that many shilas about it yet.
Let me ask you the halachic question: if this sugya of abortion in halacha, how would you deal with this shila? If a woman came to you and she had the Zika virus and she was pregnant,
abortion is an old halachic discussion, and it's a very passionate debate between Gedolei Olam, Rav Moshe, as you know, held that it's mitzicha, that it's murder to perform an abortion. Tzitz Eliezer and many other gedolim disagreed, and they thought that it's usher to do for no reason, that's for sure, but it would be a violation of chavala begufo, of injuring oneself. One is permitted to injure oneself for even less than a pikuach nefesh consideration, even if it's not a threat to the mother's life. But when something is a threat to the mother's life, then everyone agrees that one is permitted to perform an abortion. The medical professionals would have to be give very clear diagnosis of what exactly, or prognosis of what exactly is expected to happen, how much of a threat it is to the mother, what kind of life the child would have, and then you have to figure out which posek you're going to go to. Are you going to go to someone who follows Rav Moshe's shita, which in general are going to fall much more on the machmir side, or the Tzitz Eliezer, and Rav Shlomo Zalman held like Rav Moshe also, or someone who would follow the Tzitz Eliezer. I know Mori Virabi, Rav Shechter, is more of the mind of the Tzitz Eliezer than of Rav Moshe on this particular matter.
What rias would there be that it is an Issa Ritzicha?
Oh, it's interesting. If you look at Rav Moshe's tshuvas on abortion, he quotes certain sources that views them as typos. He says that things were misunderstood throughout the generation. The rias are not all that strong that it is Ritzicha. The Gemara, the ultimate raya would be that the Gemara refers to a baby that is threatening the mother's life as a rodef, and since it's chasing after the mother's life, that's the heter, the Gemara explains, to kill the baby in order to save the mother's life. You only need to come on to that explanation if you hold that killing the baby is ritzicha, that it's actually murder.
But the Gemara is referring to Uber Shahitzi Reishe, but that's already, right, after it removed it's already basically been born.
The assumption that Rav Moshe works with is that even beforehand, you would not be allowed to perform the abortion unless it's actually threatening the mother's life. The Gemara, once a Totsi Rosho, says different. Once a Totsi Rosho, the halacha is that ain doch and nefesh b'pnei nefesh.
Right.
Then they're both lives. We assume Mishamaya Karat Vila. The baby's no longer considered the rodef. It's just the stalemate that it's mother against baby, and then we don't get to choose.
Right, so the Gemara says they're mutual right for him. But I think Rav Moshe brings a right from the Lashon HaRambam, that the Rambam says that the child is a right if pre-birth.
The real debate, I mean, it's revolved around a lot of things, but part of the major part of the debate between Rav Moshe and the Tzitz Eliezer surrounded a Maharit, a Tshuvas Maharit, where Rav Moshe essentially makes an accusation that the Tshuvas Maharit was forged.
Well, because
you get the impression when you read Rav Moshe that he had an intuition about this more than anything else, that abortion has to be ritzicha, and that he was working with that intuition, that he couldn't imagine another tzad.
Thank you very much. It's always a great honor having you with us, and we enjoy every time somebody sends me one of your shiurim from YU Torah. We enjoy it very much. Keep on being Maribitz Torah. For the next 2 weeks, there will be no show. We will have the Ura Marathon, and after that, we have Shavuos. I look forward to speaking to you all in 3 weeks from now.